Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Firefighters in the Inland Empire are mopping up today after three wildfires fed by high heat and low humidity tore across hundreds of acres yesterday. Law enforcement officials in Riverside County are looking for welders believed to have sparked the Garza fire near Paris, prompting the evacuation of about 50 homes. And in San Bernardino County, two blazes caused Caltrans to shut down most lanes of I-15, which links the high desert to Las Vegas. The traffic nightmare was compounded by falling power lines and a 2,000-gallon fuel spill. The National Weather Service expects triple-digit temperatures to persist in the area all week long. Up in Sacramento, the California Board of Forestry and Fire Protection approved an annual fee for some 850,000 rural homeowners. They'd have to pay up to $90 a year, but that's well below the $150 presumed by state lawmakers in their June budget. Cal Fire now faces a budget gap unless the board increases the fee or the legislature delivers more funding. Lawmakers are holding a hearing today in Sacramento to examine the state's controversial use of isolation units at Pelican Bay State Prison and three other facilities. The hearing follows a three-week hunger strike last month by inmates over their living conditions. Michael Montgomery reports on two inmates whose very different paths led them to Pelican Bay.
In 1979, Arturo Castellanos was convicted of murder in L.A. County and sentenced to 26 years to life. After a series of assaults behind bars, the state determined Castellanos was a member of the Mexican Mafia prison gang and sent him here to Pelican Bay State Prison on California's remote north coast.
B-Pod.
The stark, windowless cells at Pelican Bay's Security Housing Unit, or SHU, were designed to incapacitate inmates like Castellanos. But authorities say he continued to command gang members on the street through edicts smuggled out of prison on tiny scraps of paper. Peter Hernandez is an assistant U.S. attorney for California's Central District.
I was just amazed that an individual who no one has seen for generations is able to control the violence and the illegal criminal activity of a particular area that he hasn't been to in more than three decades.
Hernandez says in 2004, under Castellanos's guidance, a Latino street gang known as the F-13s launched a turf battle against African-American rivals, triggering racial violence in the Florence-Firestone area north of Watts. More than 20 people were killed, and in 2007, the feds indicted 104 suspects. But prosecutors chose not to go after Castellanos. To do so, the government would have had to pull him out of Pelican Bay for court hearings. Hernandez says it was safer to keep him in isolation.
It's important for that person, Castellanos, not to be let out because he has so much sway over gang members to do certain things that otherwise a typical gang member may not have wanted to do.
We're going to take you inside a pod.
During a tour of Pelican Bay's Security Housing Unit last week, officials underscored the bleak conditions are necessary to deal with dangerous gang members like Castellanos. Here, inmates spend 23 hours a day locked in windowless cells with 1 hour of exercise in an adjoining concrete pen. Acting Warden Greg Lewis alleged that all four leaders of the recent hunger strike, including Castellanos, were in the upper echelons of different prison gangs.
Each one of them are very intelligent, very manipulative, and possess the intellect to orchestrate what they did.
However, not all the inmates housed in the SHU are alleged gang leaders. Take Ernesto Lira. He was a petty thief serving time for minor drug possession. Then authorities determined he was associated with a violent Latino prison gang and sent him to Pelican Bay for an indeterminate term. Lira was not accused of actually doing anything tangible for the gang. The key piece of evidence against him? A drawing found in his locker that allegedly contained gang symbols.
In my first 2 months, it was hard for me to, you know, get used to the fact that I'm going to be here. And I'm always, you know, I always looked ahead and say, hey, well, maybe next month or maybe in 3 months I'll go back and they'll find out this is all a mistake and they'll kick me out of here.
Officials told Lira he had a way out. He could debrief or snitch on other gang members. But as a judge later determined, Lira couldn't do that because he wasn't a member of any gang. He didn't get out of the SHU until his release from prison 8 years later. Lira eventually won a judgment in U.S. District Court against the Department of Corrections, in part for psychological damage he suffered while locked in isolation. Prisoner rights attorney Charles Carbone has represented dozens of inmates locked in Pelican Bay's SHU.
In Ernesto's case, I think it's very emblematic of the fact that people can be placed in solitary confinement for the littlest of reasons, for having a drawing, a picture of some kind, for having an address in an address book without confirming or denying whether that address was used for furthering gang activity.
Corrections officials are now considering changes that could help keep inmates like Lyra out of isolation units. To get in, you'd have to commit a specific offense for a gang or be involved in an active conspiracy. Also under consideration are incentives to encourage inmates to work their way out of the SHU through better behavior. It's known as a step-down program and usually doesn't require inmates to debrief or snitch.
That's a wonderful concept. I've never heard of that before. It's novel. It would have saved me a whole lot of grief. Might have taken me off the hit list.
Rene Enriquez is a former Mexican mafia leader who spent 10 years in the SHU and then agreed to drop out.
I'm with the California Department of Corrections. Rene, would you introduce yourself for the camera?
My name is Rene Enriquez. I have been involved in organized crime for 20 years. And I've been
the video of his debriefing is on YouTube. Since then, Enriquez has cooperated from behind bars in several high-level gang prosecutions. He says the department is right to stay tough on gang leaders, but it should take a more nuanced approach towards others, including offering a less traumatic path out of the SHU that doesn't include debriefing.
I met with Mexican mafia members, active, and told me I want to drop out. I don't think I can do it. 50% of the members of the Mexican mafia would gravitate towards dropping out if it was less traumatic.
At today's hearing, corrections officials are expected to discuss a range of reforms that could include modifying the debriefing policy. But officials emphasize two things. Any big changes could take months, if not years, to hammer out, and the department will continue to use security housing units for inmates who pose a major security threat. For the California Report, I'm Michael Montgomery.
That's the California Report for Tuesday, August 23rd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. The California Endowment, building healthy communities because that's where health happens. More information at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com.